E1, number 24B.
Can you see how she shows that fundamentally law is mind? The moment we consider the law of mind from the point of view of spirit, that law of mind becomes order. So that order is just another way, another kind of law. Namely, order is that kind of law which says that everything happens in order, in sequence, in definite sequence, in definite arrangement. When she speaks about law in connection with soul, then she indicates that the law of soul is that where the higher governs the lower. Can you see quite a different aspect of law? The higher governing the lower. She speaks also about the immutable law of God, but actually not in connection with the synonymous term itself. But with the synonymous term itself, you get this feel that now the higher governing the lower is actually a rule. It's actually a rule. That's a rule that the higher governs the lower. So that rule is that kind of law when it is looked at from the point of view of soul. Can you get the flow now? She starts with mind and says, mind is law per se. The moment you consider how this law operates in an ordered sequence, it becomes the law of spirit as order. And when she begins to show that this law of spirit is higher than the law of matter, that the higher governs the lower, that the spiritual governs the material, you get the rule as the law of soul. She never speaks about the law of principle, but the other way around, that principle, that science is the principle of all law. But then she speaks about the law of life, namely, that it is the resuscitating law of life. And you get the sense that at the point of life, the law of mind becomes now that law which exalts us, which lifts us above the human law, above mortal law, and is therefore the exalting or resuscitating law of life. Law in connection with truth, again, is different. There she speaks in two ways, in a positive and a negative way, or in the way regard to the counterfeit, namely, as the law of infinite possibilities. You just can see truth that is truth to all truths, and therefore the law of infinite possibilities. In regard to error, it is the law of uncovering error, the law for the destruction of error. So it has two sides here, according to the standpoint from which we look at truth. From truth itself, it is the law of infinite possibilities, looked at how this law acts on error. It's the law of uncovering and destroying error. Then, with love, she uses the term law quite often. It's the law of fulfillment. Love fulfills the law of Christian Science. So it's the law of fulfillment. The law of compensation, which again is another term for fulfillment. The law of redemption, which again is another form of fulfillment. It's that law of unlimited blessing. These are my terms for expressing a few statements. It's that law which says that love just can't help but bless, but fulfill, but to compensate. And also, in its highest sense, it's the law of unity of God and nature. Twice she indicates that highest law of love, which we really know, it's so difficult for the human sense of love to lose that human sense of love and really to take on the divine sense of love. I think we have the greatest difficulty because a lot of affection and sentiment is attached to the term love. But the scientific sense of love is really that where she would say that there is absolute unity between God and its manifestation. Love that is never without its object and manifestation. That's really love. Completely free from that sense of loving and loving and smiling, completely free from that love which has the church vestibule smile, all that is out here. It's the scientific sense of pure unity of principle and idea as one. That love is that constituents in being which says the principle is never without its manifestation. It's never unexpressed. That's love. When principle is never unexpressed, never unmanifested, never unobjectified, never unrepresented, that's the high sense of love. So, we have seven new laws, you see. And so we build up, little by little, the concept of law. So we have here 12 plus 7, already 19 laws. And this is what we get slowly. Now, naturally, these are not the only laws that we will have to consider. And perhaps we will see, even in this week, and not this week, next year, that we find terrific new laws. For instance, we'll find also those laws, and these we will contemplate today and tomorrow, the laws that state the interdependence of one level with the other. You see, what we have been doing up to now is really that we have made an analysis of the one being and have analyzed it into categories, about which one category was the horizontal categories of the levels, then other categories of the verticals. But if you take, for instance, the horizontals, the level laws, then we must remember that these levels are not really separated from one another. Only for the sake of analysis and for the sake of understanding did we make those levels. But these levels actually do not exist one on top of the other. That's only our human symbolization which we use. Actually, they are intertwined into each other. There where the level of science is, there exactly is also the level of divine science, and there is exactly also the level of absolute Christian science, and there is also the level of Christian science. So that we must consider that vertically, these levels are connected with each other, are interdependent with each other. And so we can state the interdependence of the levels, really through laws of interdependence. And we want to put most of our time now on the question just of how the level of absolute Christian science really is interdependent with the level of Christian science. And there we can take the word first and see the law of interdependence, then afterwards the Christ, and then Christianity, and then science. In this way, culturing our consciousness in seeing how interrelated everything is. So we would have to start with these laws of interdependence, but before we start, I think we make a break so that we don't have to break up in the middle of everything. So we will touch on the subject of laws of interdependence. And that naturally means that we are considering really the way how the various levels intertwine. And so you just have a mental picture really of the chart in front of you. I say that mental picture for those who hear the tape so that they know that now we have the chart projected, and that they know where we are when we are talking. You see, for instance, if you take the word and look at it vertically, then you have in divine science life as the word. And you remember that when we were going through the horizontals, that life here means one life, the one and only life, the oneness of life. And this is really the word of life. But if we would only stay there in consciousness and would see, yes, there is only one life in being, and that's all the life there is, then something within us would call for something, namely for life, truth, and love. Somehow this life, this one life, would at once say, yes, that's nice to have one life, but that one life should always express itself. And you hear within you that tone of one life would ask, so to say, for a constant expression and expression and impulsion of that life. We cannot always have somewhere a big reservoir of life, but somehow there must be an outflow of that reservoir. And so in absolute Christian science, life, truth, and love give us a sense that within that one life there is constantly that infinite impulsion, creative impulsion, which says, let there be life. Let there be life. Let that life be true. Let that life be fulfilled. So that you feel within yourself a consciousness that gives you that terrific, dynamic impulsion of life, truth, and love. When you are in absolute Christian science at the point of life, truth, and love, something within you says, yes, but what does that life bring forth? If there is creative impulsion, what does it create? What does it bring forth? And therefore, what it does bring forth is really that one life, truth, and love says, I bring forth constantly. And then you come to the word in Christian science, I bring forth constantly mind, the creative sense of being, mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. You see, you come to that standpoint where you feel that in Absolute Christian Science you have a terrific creative impulsion, and you ask, what does it bring forth? And they naturally cannot bring forth anything but the synonymous terms. But what is brought forth is the Word of God in Christian Science. Namely, that it says, I am mind, I am spirit, I am soul, I am principle, I am life, truth, love. So you can see that the Word in Christian Science as a creative order in being, that the Word in Christian Science is the presentation of the whole nature of being as impelled by life, truth, and love. Can you see what the difference it is if we see the interdependence in those verticals? Then just if we would say, what is God? And just say, well, God is mind, God is spirit, God is soul, principle, and life, and truth, and love. What a difference it makes when we feel that there is a higher authority at work to bring to our consciousness the fact that God is mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. That there is a impelling force in being, namely life, truth, and love in Absolute Christian Science, which impels on human thought, on the level of Christian Science, impels on human thought that mind springs into consciousness, that mind is seen by human consciousness, that the human consciousness is acquainted that the order of mind is spirit. And so that the human consciousness is acquainted with the fact that the order of spirit becomes the rule of soul and the definiteness of soul, and that that becomes the governing principle of my consciousness, and that therefore it becomes the life proposition to human consciousness, and therefore the dominion of truth for human consciousness, and then the plan and fulfillment for human consciousness. So, can you just be restful and just think about that beauty of this interdependence? And we see the beauty when we feel, yes, Mrs. Eddy gives us a definition of God. Just that. That would be really only the Word in Christian Science. And when she says, I give you a definition of God, the very first motion that is within us, that would be, all right, then I have to learn it. I have to get acquainted with it. How do I go about it? How can I learn it? How can I get hold of it? And you feel at once that this is a very heavy approach, a very burdensome approach, because did you listen what I said? I have to learn it. I have to get hold of it. You start with the personal I and are faced, so to say, or presented with the definition of God. Okay, that may be right at the beginning, but later when we see the whole model of being, we say, can I learn and get acquainted with the definition of God? Or is there a bigger I than my personal I? And the bigger I is always the person of God, which is life, truth, and love. And so we can see, oh, actually it is so, that the only I there is life, truth, and love in absolute Christian science. That's the only I there is, and that I, as life, truth, and love, says, I, life, truth, and love, impel the creation or the creative order of mind. I, life, truth, and love, impel the creative order of mind leading to spirit, and spirit leading to soul, soul leading to principle, principle leading to life, life leading to truth, truth leading to love. So that within one's consciousness one feels, oh, there is a terrific law of interdependence at work. Namely that life, truth, and love in absolute Christian science is intertwined with the word in Christian science. But that in the hierarchy of those two, absolute Christian science is the dominant one, and the word order in Christian science is the secondary one. Then you feel that actually you can go through life with a completely different attitude. Then you don't go through life anymore by thinking, I have to remind myself that there is only one mind, that not mortal mind. I have to remind myself that I have to think in a spiritual way and not in a dualistic way of spirit and matter. I don't have to remind myself that I shall use soul sense and spiritual understanding instead of sense testimony, and so on. This drops out of consciousness because when we start out from life, truth, and love, I just know, because that is the law of spontaneity. You see, we have defined the level of absolute Christian science as the law of spontaneity. Therefore, that law where the divine I is constantly, spontaneously bringing out its nature. I don't have to bring it out. I just am in a state of listening divinely, in a state of listening where life says, I am the impulsion of everything. And the impulsion of everything which is true and which is complete, life, truth, and love. And I, life, truth, and love, impel the coming forth of mind. I, life, truth, and love, am the impelling force that brings forth spirit, the purity of spirit, the onlyness of spirit. I, life, truth, and love, am that brings forth and impels to bring forth soul, the true identity, the changelessness of being, the sinlessness of being, the untouchability of being. It says, I, life, truth, and love, impel to bring forth the government of principle. I, life, truth, and love, bring forth the exaltation of life, the eternality of life, the individuality of life. I, life, truth, and love, that's the I, bring forth and impel to bring forth the true consciousness of truth, the great impelling actuality and factuality of truth. And life, truth, and love says, I, the great I, life, truth, and love, impel the coming forth of all, of the whole telephinalistic plane of love, the theological plane of love, the goal-directed plane of love, and fulfill it. Can you hear how in that way you really feel that the divine I am, as life, truth, and love, is presenting to human consciousness the fact that being is mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. takes away from us completely the sense that I have to get hold of it, that I have to maintain it, that I have to think about it and stick to it and maintain it and constantly affirm it, and even have a bad conscience if sometimes I don't think about it, and then I don't think about it and think about something else and read a book and read the papers or go for a nice walk and or talk with somebody else or in business or washing up or whatever you do, that you don't have the feeling that you missed something in being, because you, humanly, you were not thinking about these things. What matters is that you entertain a listening consciousness which knows, you see, that there is one life in divine science, that there is one life in divine science, that therefore there is one isness in divine science, one great isness, and therefore our thought gets free and free from the fact that being is only then being when I think of it. We establish within our consciousness a great fact that being is being no matter if I think of it or if I don't think of it, if I am awake or if I am asleep, if I do some other work or not, there is one being, and that being is being, the only being. And I know now in absolute Christian science that within that one life there is constantly that impelling force at work which says, and I, the one life, bring forth through the impulsion of life, truth and love, that one life all the time, everywhere. I only have to know that. And therefore what it brings forth constantly, that one life, is that it presents to consciousness and to human consciousness on the level of Christian science the nature of the one mind, the nature of the one spirit, the nature of the one soul, the one principle, the one life, the one truth, the one love. Then I can be quiet and at peace and at rest. Then I can let it happen.